You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast. As always, I am your co-host, Zach Folador, steering this ship along with my partner in crime, Sam Filman, live from Indiana. Sam, how you doing today, man?
Good. The March Madness just got done in Indy, so we're feeling ourselves as a state, proving why we're one of the best host cities in America. Just putting it out there, every tournament we host or every sporting event we host, it's always a banger. And look what happened this year.
Yeah, man. You know what? I was actually thinking about this the other day. I feel like Indianapolis has like carved out. They've like uniquely positioned themselves as a city. Like usually the cities that host like Final Fours and Super Bowls and things like that, you think about like huge markets, you know, Miami, Los Angeles, New York. But like Indianapolis does it and they kill it as well. I was there, 4 years ago for the Big Ten championship game whenever Penn State was there against Wisconsin. The way the city, with the way it's set up, everything's walkable, it's flat, everything's open. It's great. I love it. And honestly, one of these years, whenever the Big Ten tournament is in Indianapolis and there's fans allowed, I'm going to be there because I think it's an awesome place to, for, like you said, you guys, the way you host events is great.
Yeah, I mean, every event we host, it's always a banger. I went to the Big Ten tournament. There wasn't as many fans, obviously, due to COVID. Still a really fun time. The atmosphere was still great. It was weird how they had the stadium in only a third of the stadium, which made it just seem a lot like smaller than it actually was. But, yeah, one heck of a tournament. Shout out to Baylor for getting it done against Gonzaga. I didn't think they would. They got it done. They proved me wrong. And but Zach, we got quite a decent amount of spring sports still to talk about.
Yeah, we do. And some news as well, Sam. Let's start off with some news. I mean, even as hoops winds down and the season finishes up, still a lot to talk about here. Let's start off here. Let's start the show though, Sam, with some news out of Mount Pleasant and a little bit of a surprising decision. I guess the timing of it was surprising for me from Central Michigan.
Yeah. If you haven't heard, if you're a Chippewa fan or just a MAC fan, Central Michigan did part ways with their men's basketball coach in Keno Davis after 9 seasons. And one interesting thought that just popped in my mind, Zach, is did the Eastern Michigan thing happen and then they kind of saw what they did? We're like, hey, this is the time to do it. Let's go in a different direction. We obviously clearly didn't have the best year last year. This is obviously a rebuilding program right now in men's basketball. We get a fresh blood in there. Keno Davis has had 9 seasons to turn around. He didn't do the best last year, and it's time for some fresh blood in there.
Hey, I gotta give a shout out to Hustle Belt real quick, because as I was researching Keno Davis, if you look up Keno Davis on Google, it lists his salary as $300,000 a year, and then it cites Hustle Belt as the source for where they found that. So I thought that was pretty cool. But anyway, to your point, Sam, I hadn't thought about Eastern Michigan's decision affecting Central Michigan's decision. That could be it, because to me, as I referenced earlier in the introduction, the timing of this was a little bit odd to me. You know, they finally pulled the trigger and made this decision on April 7th, a month after they played their last game. They just lost a month of potential recruiting. They lost a month of potential preparation for the next season by waiting so long to fire their coach. You know, a lot of schools that have made that decision to fire their coach, you know, they finish their conference tournament, they play their last game of the year, and usually they make that announcement like 2 days, 3 days later. it is curious to me that they waited a month. But you're right. Maybe Eastern Michigan's decision had something to do with it. I think, though, there was a general sentiment, it seemed like, among Central Michigan fans that, you know, under Keno Davis, you know, there were some good years. They had the Marcus Keene year. But I think there was just a sense that it wasn't working here these last couple of seasons.
Yeah, to your point, he did have early success, two division championships, one one tournament game appearance losing to Buffalo in 2015. He did have early success, but like you have with every head coach, is you have to sustain that. You can't just rely on what happened 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. In his case, 7, 8 years ago. You have to keep building on, you have to keep improving. And you mentioned the Marcus Keene year. What did they really do after that year? Not a whole lot, really. Yeah. They had an appearance in the CBI in 2019, two appearances in the CIT in 2016 and 2018. But that's not what you want. I'm sorry, but the CBI and the CIT, I'm sorry to tell you, isn't very impressive. When you're showing recruits your NCAA tournament appearances, you mentioned those things last, if at all.
Yeah.
Like football teams, you're going to be glad if you get a bowl victory, but there's no sort of invitational tournament that you have. And it's to me, he just didn't get it done these past few years. The writing was on the wall, I think, these past couple of years. It was time, like you said, weird timing. I think they should have done it sooner after the season, but it's happened now. Hopefully with the interim guy, if they decide to stick with him, or if they can go out. I've heard rumblings of different head coaches, but whatever they do, hopefully they can build this program from the bottom up again.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, Central Michigan and Eastern Michigan, both in kind of the same boat right now. And actually, I would say any coach or any university, excuse me, that chose to make a head coaching change this offseason, with the exception of the blue bloods like, you know, North Carolina, who just, you know, promoted Hubert Davis and some other exceptions, Arizona, who just fired Sean Miller today, I would put in this boat. But most of these programs, you know, they're a little bit strapped for cash right now. You know what I mean? COVID, the last year, you haven't been able to have fans in the stands. Money has been lost. A lot of these programs are not in a great financial position to go out and make a big splash hire right now, unless they have a huge donor base that will throw money at them, which, you know, Indiana and Arizona and some of these other schools do. Obviously, MAC schools aren't in that position. So I think this year, more so than other years, you're going to see finances really, really kind of play a part in who these programs are able to hire.
Yeah, and you mentioned the finances. In case you're curious, I believe I saw on Twitter his buyout was $400K. And apparently people were saying it was due to a donor paying it off. So shout out to that donor, whoever decided to write off that bill for $400,000. Shout out to the IU donor who paid off Archie Miller for $10 million. It's just crazy. Like we were talking off air, if you're going to make them, if you're going to the saying goes, like, you make your bed, you have to lay in it sort of thing. Yeah. And these universities aren't being held accountable for making stupid decisions. And that's just crap to me. Zach, back when you were in college, if you got an F, you couldn't write that off on your friend, could you? No, right. It was your F. Right. You earned that F. You got to stick with it. And I just think it's a little bit sus that you could just get an owner to pay off your coach and just move on just like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Sam. I agree with that point completely. And I think the other part of that equation is just we got to talk about how, you know, these college coaching contracts and buyouts, like, they've gotten a little bit absurd. You know what I mean? I mean, Archie Miller, he's getting paid $10 million not to work now because that was the contract and the buyout clause that Indiana gave him. Like you said, Sam, they made that bed. Now they got to lay in it. Of course, yes, you had, as you mentioned, they have some donors with some deep pockets. But man, I don't know how some of these schools are going to be able to continue to sustain these buyouts where you're going to be, you know, you're paying that $10 million for a coach to walk away. It's insane to me. I'd love for someone to pay me $10 million not to work, but it's not going to happen. Like, you know what I mean? It's so unique to college and professional sports that it blows my mind every time it happens.
Yeah, basketball and college football coaches, the extreme high, how you can pay, you can sign someone to a 7-year contract, get out of it four and pay someone still $5 million, $10 million. I will never know, because most of the cases, these coaches are making more than the university presidents.
Yeah.
The person that's supposed to hold the most responsibility, get paid the most, he's not the highest paid employee. It's usually the college football basketball coach. And really look to see what your coach is doing and whether he deserves that contract, because more than likely not, unless you've established a program, he doesn't deserve it. Let's be honest.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I agree with you there, man. So yeah, we'll be keeping our eyes on both of these coaching searches here. With, you know, Eastern Michigan and Central Michigan. Obviously, you know, Northern Illinois was the other university, MAC school that, you know, made a coaching change this offseason. They filled their vacancy a couple weeks ago. So these are the only two vacancies we're still keeping our eyes on. We'll see what the Chippewas and the Eagles decide to do moving forward here. Sticking with hoops real quick here, we got some transfer news, and unfortunately for your Cardinals, Sam, neither of these announcements are very good.
Yeah, Jerron Coleman and Ishmael Amin, who we probably talked about 2-3 episodes ago, putting their names in the transfer portal. Unfortunately, they both have left. I think Ish is way more surprising than Jerron Coleman. But when you can go to a team like Missouri, I can't be mad at either of these players for transferring. I didn't mention Ishmael Almeen transferred to Rhode Island, right?
Yeah, that's it.
And then Jerron Coleman transferred to the SEC school that is Missouri. But yeah, big transfers, a lot to talk about. Definitely a big blow to the Ball State program, but I can't hate either of these players for transferring out.
Yeah, I think I was surprised by the destination for Ish. I wasn't surprised in his decision to go and want to play his last year somewhere else. I think a lot of, you know, seniors with an extra year of eligibility are taking advantage of that. I was, you know, again, I feel like, you know, Ball State to Rhode Island, to me, it feels like kind of a lateral move. I mean, maybe it's a slight step up. Maybe the Atlantic 10 is, I mean, I'm not, I guess, the Atlantic 10 is probably a little bit better than the MAC top to bottom as a league, but program to program, I don't feel like Rhode Island is significantly better than Ball State. I could be wrong about that. Now with Jerron Coleman, I'm not surprised with his destination that he transferred to a Power 5 program. I was surprised though by his decision to enter to the transfer portal in the first place. I mean, he was going to be the guy for the Cardinals next year. And, you know, I guess I can't fault him for wanting to test his, you know, his talents and bring his talents to a Power 5 conference. But regardless, you hate to see either of these guys leave the conference because they've both been so good.
Yeah, I'll start with Jerron Coleman. I loved him. He was an Indianapolis guy, went to a local high school in Cathedral High School, known for doing a decent amount of what would you call it? A little bit of a athletics powerhouse in Indianapolis sort of thing. Not as high as you would see like Lawrence North, the Lawrence Centrals, but still a pretty good powerhouse. He was a beast. I think I mentioned on this podcast, if not, I mentioned it off air. Like I think he could have been first team All MAC, if not potential to be MAC player of the year with everybody leaving. We know Justin Turner's leaving, Mike Nuga potentially. We know, Ish, of course, now is
Danny Pippen's gone.
Danny Pippen, Lauren Christian Jackson, Marion Jackson. He had the potential to be not only the guy at Ball State, but one of the faces of the MAC moving forward. He was only a sophomore. Last year, I saw glimpses of what he had. He could have been a 20-point per game scorer. And I'm glad a team like Missouri realized his talent, found a MAC player like Jerron Coleman, entered the transfer portal, saw the talent that he had. Because I think Ball State at times didn't feature him like they should. They still had Ish at the time, which was hurting you. KJ was in his fifth year. You didn't you couldn't really put the bonds to Jerron Coleman's as much as you want. He was obviously the main point guard, but the offense went through Ish, went through KJ, went through all their other plays, and that kind of hurt you at times. So I'm glad Missouri found a talent like him because they're going to get a stud. Missouri was in the NCAA tournament last year. I hope he shines well. Maybe he gets a shot at the NBA if he can do well. On the other side, Ish, I think the writing was on the wall. Last year he put in the transfer portal. I just don't think Ball State this year was where he wanted to be. I think he was hoping to get a Division I offer last year. I don't think if he did get it and maybe turned it down to return to Ball State because he didn't like it, I think he kind of settled. I could be wrong on this. I think he kind of settled for Rhode Island because he's from Minnesota. I think his brother still plays high school there. I think he's another amazing athlete. I think if he would have gotten the call from, since it's not Rick Pitino's brother anymore or son anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who's the interim, whoever the case is to come play for them. I'm sure he would have said yes. I think he just kind of settled on the first team that offered him. And I respect him for it. He's an amazing athlete, amazing career at Ball State, but I think it was time for him to go. Cause I don't think he as great of a player what he was, I don't think he envisioned himself staying 4 years like he did last year.
That's an interesting point. I forgot that he had entered the portal last year and ultimately decided to come back to Ball State. So that I feel like now that you put that into context, I think you might be right. That does make this decision make a little bit more sense. And maybe that is what it was. As a Cardinals fan, I got to ask you, now that this has happened, you've lost Jaron Coleman, you lost Ish. What's the outlook for next year? I mean, I feel like that's a lot of your offense is gone. You know, Walton graduated. Where are the points coming from next year?
I'm not going to lie. It's probably not going to be pretty at all. Like I think similar to the Central Michigan thing, I think it's just got to be a rebuilding year. We have a nice forward / center coming in, Peyton Sparks, next year. We obviously have Bumbleo still. We have some nice young guys, and that's who we're going to go through. Blake Huggins needs to develop more. He's a big body, but that's all he is right now. We need to find a wing scorer that's going to do work, and I think that's where Zach Gunn can come in. He's been a little bit injury-ridden through the years. I believe we still have Myron Thomas still there. He's I would say an above average dunker. He can hit the outside shot. I believe at one point he was I believe either top 5, top 10 in the NCAA in 3-point percentage at one time. It's just going to be, I don't think it's going to look pretty, but it's going to be a mesh of the semi-veteran guys with the new guys coming in and Peyton Sparks. And I believe they have one more that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Yeah, I don't think he's committed. So it's just the two.
Okay.
Bashir Jihad from North Farmington High School and then Peyton Sparks. I forget the high school, but he's from like Chicago, Illinois.
Okay. Certainly a good hotbed for high school talent there being in Chicago. So yeah, we'll see. It certainly seems like it's going to be a rebuilding year for the Cardinals next year. You hate to see both of those guys go if you're a Mac fan, because they were so good for the last couple of years. But nonetheless, as you said, Sam, Jaron and Ish, we wish them both the best. The other two, I guess, very notable transfers out of the Mac right now. You got Mike Nuga from Kent State, who no announcements from him just yet. He hasn't made a decision or you know, listed a timeline or anything like that. Marion Jackson, the Toledo point guard, he has not made a final decision yet, but he has said that he's going to make his final announcement on this Friday, the 9th. And he did announce his top four. He's going to be going between Arkansas, Arizona State, Georgetown, and Miami, Florida. I feel like every transfer in the country ends up going to Arkansas or like considering Arkansas. Arizona State with Bobby Hurley, Georgetown, Patrick Ewing, and then Miami. They had a bit of a tough year this year, but they've been a solid program here over the last decade or so. You know, he came out initially and said he wanted to play against Power 5 competition. So obviously all four of these teams check that box. Be interesting to see where he ends up, Sam.
Yeah, I agree. You mentioned Arkansas. I mean, when you look at what Justin Smith did transferring from IU to Arkansas, I mean, who can blame him? Georgetown's an interesting program. They just made the NCAA tournament under Patrick Ewing after that amazing Big East tournament run. The Miami, Florida is interesting for the simple fact that they haven't really been relevant since Shane Larkin was there when yeah. they made the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago. And then Arizona State with Bobby Hurley. Bobby Hurley's a legend. He will forever be a legend in my book. Just a great coach. I'm expecting big things on for Arizona State. But anyway, yeah, interesting top four. Any program that gets me on Jackson is gonna have one heck of an athlete.
Yeah, they are. And you know, I think when I look at that list of teams there, I think Arkansas really jumps out to me. Not so much because of the fact that so many team, you know, kids seem to transfer in there, but more so just because of the way that they play. They're so up tempo. They seem to play very similar to how Toledo plays. And so I feel like he would be a really good fit in that system. We'll see how, he acquits himself and what he ends up picking here on Friday. Sam, we got our first MAC spring football game coming up here on Saturday, which is crazy to think about. But, hey, you know, spring football is here. It means the season's not too far away.
Yeah, pro day season is already here. We've seen a couple pro days already. I think Ball State's is on Friday, if I'm not mm-hmm. wrong on that. But, yeah, yeah, you mentioned spring game. We got our first one Saturday, April 10th, NIU. And if you don't know why that's significant, it's our first chance to see their new transfer quarterback, a former four-star coming out of high school in Rocky Lombardi, transfer from Michigan State. So we'll see if he's going to be the starter. We'll see if they decide to move in a different direction. I'm excited to see him because we don't get a whole lot of four-star or former four-star recruits in the MAC. So yeah. Whenever we get a chance, it's going to be must-watch TV.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And honestly, as much as I am really excited to see Rocky Lombardi, I'm also really excited to see what the team looks like in general. We talked a lot about last year about how young this team was. I mean, they had 60 plus freshmen on their roster. Everyone knew it was going to be a rough year for Coach Hammack and the Huskies last year. They, you know, by the end of the season, they had greatly improved. Obviously they, you know, they weren't able to get in the win column, but they had greatly improved by the end of the year. I mean, they got, you know, your leading rusher last year, Harrison Whaley, was a freshman. Your second leading receiver, Trayvon Rudolph, was a freshman. Your top two leading tacklers on defense, Devin Lafayette, he was a freshman. Jordan Gandy was a sophomore. I mean, there's a lot of really young talent on this team still. And I'm interested to see how they look on Saturday because I do feel like the Huskies could take a big step forward this fall.
I do too. You mentioned all the experience in another year always helps. The free eligibility year that yeah. 2020 was, it helped Northern Illinois because they knew they would have a lot of freshmen coming in. It was kind of six. I would say to them, I think they saw it as kind of a six, like spring games, six practice yes. games, if you want to call it, to see kind of where their freshmen stand among each other. And then they can move the program in that direction. With Rocky Lombardi potentially being the day one starter, that kind of switches things up. But for the most part, you got to see the majority of the roster that's coming back that hadn't transferred out. You get to see who's your studs, who's your duds, and you just get a move from there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. The other thing I'm curious to see is that, you know, you mentioned obviously Rocky Lombardi. I think a lot of people are assuming he's going to be the starter, and that's, you know, that's with good reason. But, you know, you got two other quarterbacks that, you know, were on the roster last year. Obviously Ross Bowers was the fifth year senior that took most of the snaps, but you know, Rodney Thompson was a junior last year out of San Diego. He's still a potential option. He only threw two passes last year. And then Andrew Hedette, who was a senior. I'm not sure. I'll have to look up and see if he is returning. I do feel like Rocky Lombardi is going to eventually win the job, but you never know. We'll see what happens there. So, yeah, spring football is here. NIU kicking us off on Saturday. I know next Friday, the 16th, is Eastern Michigan's game. And we'll, you know, we got a couple more coming up here over the next couple weeks as well. So certainly something that we will be monitoring here over the next few weeks. Sam, any other news stories, anything else you wanted to touch on before we move into the spring sports updates?
Not really, just a little bit more on NIU Fest. It would kind of hard to me, if you're Coach Hammack, to sell a fan base on using Ross Bowers for another year. No offense to Ross Bowers, but yeah, when you have this kind of new kind of toy, I'm going to say Rocky Lombardi is a shiny new former four-star, came from a Power 5 school in Michigan State. How can you not, unless he's like Tate Martell, which I completely understand, then you just throw him away at that point. But the point remains is it's going to be hard to sell a fan base on Ross Bowers getting a 12-game schedule when you have Rocky Lombardi, who was recruited at the Power 5 level. I would, if I was Coach Hammack, I personally would like the direction of Rocky Lombardi. But if he's not comfortable with the system, then the clear choice is, the safe choice is Ross Bowers.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. So we'll see what ends up happening there. And actually, I know Ross Bowers was a senior last year. I don't know if he's going to be returning. That's something else I'll have to check up on. But regardless, I think we're both in agreement. Mm-hmm. Rocky Lombardi probably is going to be the one that ends up winning that job.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Let's move into some spring sports updates here. And Sam, actually, we had our first spring, our MAC spring champion crowned this past weekend.
Yeah, if you didn't know, the as we talked about last episode, the MAC women's volleyball championship started. Like we learned last episode, that there is not, that the MAC does not sponsor a men's volleyball. It's called something different. Anyway, the women's volleyball tournament started off, and to no surprise, I don't think, Bowling Green got it done. It was only four teams invited, and Bowling Green came out on top. They, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 3-1 win over Western Michigan. I really feel, you know, we talked last week, Sam, about how, Western Michigan and Bowling Green really were the top two teams, head and shoulders above everyone else in the tournament, or in the conference this year. I don't think anyone is too super surprised by Bowling Green. You know, Petro Androva, Caitlin Mayer, Jacqueline Askin, all three played great all weekend. 15 plus kills for all three of them in the championship match. It was a kind of a team effort for Bowling Green. And then now, because of that, they're going to be in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2012, which was the last time they won the MAC. They're going to take on the Weber State Wildcats out of the Big Sky to earn the opportunity to take on the number one seed in the entire tournament, who is the Wisconsin Badgers. Sam, we were looking at this bracket before we started recording here today. Kind of interesting how they have this set up for women's volleyball, where it's like the top 16 teams get a bye, and then it's like essentially there's 16 play-in games for the right to make that round.
Yeah, it like in my head, if you kind of picture the first four of the NCAA men's tournament, and you kind of apply it to volleyball where it's 16 instead of the normal four, yeah, it's a little bit interesting. It's a little bit different take. Hey, it may be better, it may be worse, I don't know. But yeah, even before they reach Wisconsin, if they were to win, they still have to play a tough opponent in Weber State, who only lost one game in the Big Sky.
Yeah.
One in the conference championship, obviously, which is why they're there. Second appearance in the NCAA tournament for the Weber State Wildcats. It's going to be a fun matchup, and whoever wins this game is going to be having a tall task with them Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah, no matter what, whoever wins, like you said, you're going to be playing. I mean, Wisconsin coming in as the one seed in the entire tournament, obviously one of the best teams in the country and one of the favorites to win it all. So like you said, the Falcons will have a tall task in front of them if they're able to make it past the Wildcats in the first round. Really going to be interesting to see you know, how that pans out. That game is going to take place next Wednesday, April 14th. So best of luck to the Falcons. They're only their third appearance in NCAA tournament history, with the previous two being 1991 and 2012. So best of luck to the Falcons representing the MAC in the NCAA women's volleyball tournament. Best of luck to them. Sam, we had some really, really good series this weekend in on the baseball diamond. Central Michigan got a couple of nice wins. So did Miami. Miami really seems to be playing well right now.
Yeah. You mentioned it. It's currently conference season in baseball. We are the non-conference. So everything you see from here on out is going to be MAC conference play. Miami got a nice nail biter, 5-4 against Eastern Michigan. Central Michigan got a nice high-scoring victory, 12-10 against Northern Illinois. Toledo didn't disappoint anybody. This time won 7-6 over Ohio. Western Michigan shut out Akron 3-0 in their game. And then Kent State, their last baseball game, won 10-5 against Bowling Green.
Yeah, you know what? And I really, really impressed with the way that Miami is playing right now. The Redhawks now 10-2 in the conference, 17-9 overall. They're currently sitting in first place. Their four-game series with Eastern Michigan this weekend. On the road, they went to Ypsilanti and swept all four games from the Eagles there. Eastern Michigan having a bit of a tough year, 4-8 overall, or 4-8 in the MAC, I should say. However, you know, they were 4-4 going into that series. So a great showing from Miami this weekend. Also a really nice bounce back for Central Michigan. You know, I mentioned last week how, you know, they were the preseason favorite here in the conference, and yet they were sitting, you know, they were sitting at 2-2 in the conference. They were sixth place. Well, they must have heard me talking, because since then they have won six in a row. The first two of those happened before we recorded last week. So they were sitting at 2-2 on a two-game winning streak. They had won their last two games at Ohio last week, and then they've swept Northern Illinois all four games in DeKalb this weekend, winning, you know, 11-0, 17-6. I mean, they were the Chippewas are really, really tearing the cover off the ball this weekend. And so I think, you know, Miami is a bit of a surprise to me right now. I think Ball State is obviously still right there. Ball State and Central Michigan currently tied for second, both at 6-2. The Cardinals, let me pull them up here. The Cardinals were, what did they do? They played, so they had a couple of non-conference games this weekend where they went to Butler, or I guess it was a split series, one game in Indianapolis, two games in Muncie. Cardinals swept all three of those, though, 7-2, 10-1, and 16-10 on Sunday. My goodness, talk about some runs there. So Ball State currently at 16-2, 15-9. So, yeah, I think the top three seem like they're kind of separating themselves to me here, Sam.
Yeah, I agree. And what's interesting by looking at their stats, usually in baseball you get it done by hitting, but it's actually quite the opposite for both Ball State and Miami being the top two. You have Ball State six with a batting average of .261 and Miami having an average of .257. While they're pitching is where it's at. Miami leads the conference in ERA 3.09, and then Ball State is the second with 4.07. So it's quite an interesting shakeup. You have Central Michigan, who's first in batting average with .285, and then balanced attack third in the conference with 4.31. So it's kind of unusual. We're seeing the pitchers. I've seen the Ball State pitchers really have their way with not only the MAC conference, but like you said, with non-conference like Butler. It's unusual, but I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No, I hear you. And it's funny you mentioned that, because if you look back through the MAC baseball players of the week since the season started, going back to the end of February, so they name a player of a week and a pitcher of the week. And in seven of the week, out of the 7 weeks of the season so far, on four of those 7 weeks, the pitcher of the week for the conference has been on Ball State's pitching staff. You got Tyler Ruschel, John Baker, twice, and then Chase McDermott as well. So I agree with you. The Cardinals pitching staff really playing well right now. As far as the players of the week in the conference this week, got to give a shout out to Ben Carew, the left fielder from Kent State. He had a 6.11 average with four multi-hit games over the weekend in the flashes sweep of Bowling Green. Four RBI and four runs scored on Friday. And then he homered in game two of Saturday's doubleheader. A really nice weekend for Carew. Kent State, like I said, got the sweep over Bowling Green. A nice weekend for the Flashes, who were a little bit of slow out of the gates this year.
Yeah, I agree. And what I like watching college baseball is you never know who's going to get picked, because the MLB has such – how many rounds are in the MLB
selection draft? It's got to be close to 50. I mean, there's at least 40 rounds. It's pretty crazy.
So any of these guys could be picked. Rather in the NFL, you only have seven rounds. NBA have two rounds. You have so many rounds to get picked. So most of these guys could be round 49 for all we know. It's quite a show for Ben Carew out of Kent State. Quite a week for Brandon Peterson in Western Michigan to allow have a shutout against Akron. And I think it's just amazing, Zach, is with the baseball draft how it is, a lot of these MAC players can get drafted.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. And you know, it's good baseball in the MAC as well. I think it's a well respected mid-major conference on the diamond. So yeah, we'll obviously continue to monitor baseball here as the season continues. I think like I said, I feel like Miami, Central Michigan, Ball State, is in the top three right now, seem to be separating themselves a little bit. Kent State sitting at 4th and 5 and 3, Central Michigan at 7 and 5, and then Bowling Green at 6 and 6. So we'll see how this the season continues to play out. I think though, most MAC fans would agree with us that, you know, after baseball got completely canceled last year, almost, it's great to just see these teams back on the field and playing some games. On the softball diamond, you had a good weekend there. And Sam, it seems like I feel like a broken record saying this, but you look at the top of the softball standings, and once again, there you got Miami, you got Ball State. Miami is really, really on a tear here right now. They've won 12 in a row, have the Red Hawks, and they obviously included in that is another sweep this past weekend of Butler and Eastern Kentucky. They played this weekend, a sweep of Central Michigan before that, a sweep of Western Michigan before that, a sweep of Louisville before that. The Red Hawks are really playing good softball right now, Sam.
Yeah, no doubt. And what's cool about Miami's run is they are leading the conference in batting average, .331. They are leading the MAC in home runs with 33 home runs. The next closest is Kent State with 23, and wow, RBIs with 170. And the next closest is Ball State at 170. Not only that, is their batting really good, but their pitching is really well. They're leading the conference in ERAs. Obviously, they have the most wins, not in the conference, but just in general with 18 wins. They have seven shutouts. I mean, what more could you ask for a program? They've just been on a tear. Ball State's neck and neck, but I still think Miami's the team to beat.
Yeah, you're right, Sam. I mean, you look at the statistics page here. I mean, first in batting, first in pitching, second in fielding percentage. I mean, there's the three major phases of your game right there. And Miami just seems to be, head and shoulders above everyone else in all of those areas. Now, Ball State, Miami's got this 12-game winning streak. Ball State, not too far behind. The Cardinals have won 8 in a row, and that included a 4-game sweep of the Chippewas this weekend in Mount Pleasant. So a nice way for the Cardinals to go on the road and get a nice series victory. Central Michigan is struggling a little bit this year. They're 2-10 in the conference. But Ball State and Miami, both schools seem to have things really kind of, the ball's rolling for both of them here in both softball and baseball. Ball State, you mentioned Miami best in the conference in terms of, batting average and a lot of those hitting metrics. Ball State's right behind them. Miami's batting .331 as a team. Ball State right behind them at .322.
Yeah, speaking of Ball State, we want to get into the players of the week. Faith Henley was named the MAC Softball Player of the Week, outfielder junior from Monroe, Ohio. She's the Player of the Week, and for the Pitcher of the Week, Kent State, is for Jessica LeBou from Kent State is the Pitcher of the Week. But like you said, Miami may be the top of the conference, but Ball State's not too far behind. Like I said, I think Miami's clearly the team to beat. But Ball State, with their winning prowess, going on an 8-run, they're basically the second team to beat there. If you want to call Miami 1A, Ball State's right behind them at 2A, creeping on them, just waiting for a chance to knock Miami off the number one spot.
Certainly. And I got to give a shout out. You mentioned the softball, the pitcher of the week, Jessica LeBou from Kent State. A really solid weekend there from the freshman. She appeared in three games in their weekend series with Ohio, 25 strikeouts in 16 innings. And she threw on Saturday, they had a doubleheader, and she threw a complete game, 161 pitches. 13 strikeouts are the most by a pitcher in a MAC contest this season. You know, Sam, it's crazy to me. I think about softball and baseball very similarly. Obviously, they're very similar games. But the one thing that is I'm still having to wrap my mind around is that I'm used to, you know, when I watch a baseball team throughout the course of a season, you got, you know, a staff of five starting pitchers. One of those guys is starting every 5 days. You look at these softball, you know, rosters. Jessica LeBou, she just pitched 3 days in a row for Kent State. And I guess I think that makes sense from like a physical standpoint of like the motion, I guess, of throwing a softball as opposed to throwing a baseball is probably not as hard on your arm and your shoulder. But still, it's crazy to me that, you know, they had four games this weekend and she played in three of them and played really well.
Hey, you mentioned that. I got tired playing 2 hours of football the other day. So imagine how she feels. But yeah, like you said, 161 pitches. You mentioned 3 days in a row. Not just you think of the average MLB pitcher. They maybe have to play once every five games. These college athletes have to play three games in a row in most cases, if not two, if not one. That's just crazy to me for not only her for her consistency in one game, for her to be able to have consistency through three games. Is on another level too. To have durability like that is insane to me.
No, I'm with you there. I agree with that. And I admire that durability. I could never do that. To your point, you know, I play catch for 2 minutes with my son and I got to take a break. So it is pretty crazy. Looking forward at the softball schedule, there is a two game series. I guess I should say a doubleheader. Is what I should call it on coming up on April 20th. Ball State travels to Oxford to take on the Red Hawks. Going to be really interesting to see how that matchup plays out. They have a doubleheader, follow-up doubleheader that next week on April 28th in Muncie. So four big games here coming up between those two teams over these next couple of weeks. Might see some separation there after those four games, Sam.
Oh, and I'd like to give a quick shout out to Ball State, not letting us go to the football and basketball games, but not letting us go to the baseball or softball games. Like,
really?
Yeah. Like if you go to the baseball page under their schedule, it says no general attendance allowed at the games. So I just want a response from the administration telling me how that makes sense. And in fact, as a recording, I'm about to get my vaccination a week from now.
Nice.
So when you put that into context, when we can get vaccinations, why can't we go to these games?
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. That is interesting. I'm surprised, especially because they're outdoor sports.
Bingo. Yeah,
that's odd. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, that's all I had to say. But I just thought it was a little bit ironic. We went to an indoor sport in basketball. Yeah. And not only that, we went to an outdoor sport, only three games, but still, football. So I social distancing, if we have to, I don't care. Just let us go to the games. Because what was it? This is a little off topic, but NBA is planning for full stadiums next year.
Yeah, as is the NFL. I think a lot of people are. So. Yeah, that is an interesting decision. That's too bad. Any other final thoughts on softball, Sam?
No, let's get into some soccer.
Yeah, so let's take a look here. We'll start with the men's soccer this week, Sam. Not a ton of movement in the standings this week compared to last week. We've had, you know, we mentioned it last week, soccer more so than a lot of these other sports. We've had a lot of games canceled. Bowling Green still in first place in the conference. They're sitting at 5-4 overall. They only played one game this past week, though, and it was earlier tonight on Wednesday the 7th. They lost at Western Michigan 2-1. West Virginia, they've had two games postponed this week since our last recording. Akron has had four games postponed here over the last couple of weeks. They did play their first game in about a month just this past, what was it? I guess on Saturday it would have been. They lost at Northern Illinois 3-1. Akron right now, Sam, 3-2-1 from a team that's kind of considered a powerhouse in the conference. Sitting right now in fifth place, not what you expect from the Zips.
But at the same time, I will give Akron some credit that they are only one game out of first place for Bowling Green. That's the advantage you have when you play so limited of a schedule with postponements and whatnot. And what I find interesting, Zach, if let's say, for instance, the first team in Bowling Green doesn't play any more games, the only two games left are Akron and Northern Illinois. So if you need a chance to get back up to first place, Akron has to do so. And it says on their schedule that NCAA Men's College Cup is May 13th and 16th. And I'm not sure. Zach, you could correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think that indicates that they haven't released like the conference tourney schedule.
I believe you're correct about that, Sam. And yeah, you're right. There's only, Akron as it stands right now, though, as you said, they're only a game back, but as it stands though, only three games left. They're playing West Virginia tonight as we record, playing at Bowling Green next week. And then at Western Michigan as well. Now they've had five games. They've had four games postponed and one game canceled. So they were supposed to play St. Francis. It doesn't look like that one's going to get made up. The fact that these other ones were all, they were supposed to play Pitt. That one is listed as postponed. And then Western Michigan, SIU, Edwardsville, and at West Virginia. We'll see if they're able to make those games up. But you're right, Sam. The fact that they're, 3-2-1, is a little bit surprising to me, and 2-2 in the conference, but you're right. They're only a game back. I don't think it's anything to panic about too much, but it is odd to me. It seems like this, it seems like soccer more so than, softball, baseball, volleyball. It seems like the postponements have been much more prevalent here on the soccer pitch.
Yeah, I agree there. I think, like you said, more so than the other sports, it seems that COVID has hit their sports more than others. I don't know the reason for that. I'm not a scientist. So I'm going to say this is why, whatever the case is. But it just has. It sucks. At least they have a season. Like, looking on the bright side, football only had six total games. And soccer, let's say, let's just take Bowling Green, for instance. They have two more. They'll play 11 games. It's not a full season by any means. But it's something. It's something to show, like, for instance, Akron has plenty of players go to the MLS, MLS Super Draft, show teams where the deal is, professional clubs. So it's not what you want in the season, but with the circumstances that you had to go through, I'm sure the players will take this over not sitting, because we saw in college football, especially the players speaking up, that they truly wanted a season and they got it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I agree with that completely. If you move over, we move over to the women's soccer side, and it's kind of the same story. We talked last week about how, Bowling Green has put their program on pause. They've had, they've got four games postponed. Their last four games, I should say, which includes their upcoming game, was scheduled for Saturday versus Kent State. That game will be postponed. Buffalo has had two games postponed this week. Eastern Michigan had a game postponed this week. Ball State had a game postponed this week. There's a lot of postponements going around here in soccer. You look at the standings in soccer, Eastern Division and Bowling Green sitting on top, 5-1 in the conference and overall. Buffalo in second at 4-1-1. Eastern Michigan leads the Western Division with a 6-2 record. Ball State in second place at 4-2-1. It is unfortunate for these soccer athletes in the MAC with how affected their season has been. Now, in the women's side of things, the conference tournament is approaching a little bit quicker here as at the end of April. So we'll see if they have enough time to get some of these games postponed. But yeah, not a ton of games played this week in either men's or women's soccer. So unfortunately, not a lot to report on there. We'll keep our eyes on it though, as we move through the season. We'll hopefully these teams can figure out their COVID issues. Sam, did you have anything you wanted to add on women's soccer?
No, but what's interesting, if you never pay attention to women's soccer and men's soccer, is women's soccer has the full 12 permanent members.
Yeah, the full membership of the MAC. Cool. Yes.
And then men's has, what is it, four?
There's four. Yeah, there's who is it? It's Bowling Green, Akron, Northern Illinois. And who am I forgetting?
Here, wait, let me pull it up. Western Michigan.
Western Michigan. And then you have the three affiliate members with Western Virginia, SIU Edwardsville. Or is it only – are they the only –
It's only two.
Okay, so you only got six teams in men's soccer in the MAC, which, yeah, that is interesting. And I actually, to be honest with you, Sam, having never followed college soccer all that closely before, it wasn't something that I realized until we started doing this podcast. So, yeah, that does make the dynamic in men's soccer a little bit different, where you're not playing as many different teams, a lot more non-conference games, stuff like that.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bowling Green's still on pause. You mentioned the women's soccer MAC tournament. It's April 16th through the 17th. They have their game on the 11th canceled. Maybe that's just a precaution to get themselves ready for the MAC tournament. But we may have a situation similar to Ohio where going into the 16th, we don't know if they can play. And if they can't play, you're out of luck, I would say, for any sort of NCAA cup. Or I haven't followed women's soccer or men's soccer that closely. I'm not sure what they do, but the point remains is hopefully Bowling Green can get their kind of ship in order so we can have a proper MAC tournament.
I agree with you. So that's another situation that we will continue to monitor here for the podcast. Sam, any final thoughts on any of these spring sports before we move into our look aheads for football and basketball next year?
No, I think I'm good on the spring sports.
Okay, perfect. So let's move into this last segment here quickly. Sam and I were talking before the show. We wanted to talk something here, looking ahead to the fall and next winter as, football season is approaching again. Obviously, you've seen over the last couple of days a ton of like way too early top 25 polls on the basketball side. So we wanted to take some time here and kind of give our I guess if you want to call them bold predictions for both seasons next year. Sam, let's start with football. What is it? What have you been thinking about? What's something that kind of your prediction, something you expect to see here in the coming football season?
I'm not excited. I'm just kind of going to be focusing on does the seniority matter in a sense. Ball State has 14 returning starters. Is that going to make a difference, or is it just going to be a season where we're back to normal and freshmen can come in and dominate? We have the, like we talked about, Rocky Lombardi, a newcomer to the conference coming in. NIU, even though their freshman has elevated to a sophomore, how good are they going to be? I think I'm just excited to see all kind of the teams like rosters unfold in a sense, because we've seen a lot of players in the transfer portal. We've seen a lot of players transfer out. We've seen a lot of players put their names into the NFL draft, and we've got pro days coming up. So I'm more kind of just curious on how all these different rosters are going to unfold.
I think that's a great point, Sam. I think this off season, both in football and basketball, the amount of player movement has been unprecedented. The amount of transfers, amount of players leaving schools, going to other schools, whatever the case may be. And like you mentioned, in a normal year under normal circumstances, seniority does really matter. And I still think it will matter this year. I think Ball State and and Kent State and some of the more veteran teams are going to be very, very well off and in a good position to compete and, you know, get to the top of the conference this year. My interest this season, I really am looking forward to seeing the development of some of the teams that were very young last year. I think, I don't know if you want to call this a bold prediction or whatever, but I really do believe, I think either Akron or Northern Illinois is going to make a bowl game this year. One of those two teams is really going to make a step forward. Both of those teams were incredibly young last year, a ton of new pieces. And both of those teams, you really saw them grow throughout the year. I think Northern Illinois was a much better team in week six than they were in week one. Same with Akron. They got their first win in a long time. They found their running back last year, kind of their bell cow and Teon Dollar, who really carried them. Zach Gibson, you saw some flashes from him as a young freshman quarterback. I think with the continuity on the coaching staff at both of those teams and with another year of development with their young players, I think one of those teams is going to make a really big leap next year.
I like your prediction. I'm more so a fan of Akron. I think Tom Arth last year was dealing with the pressure of getting his first win. Every college coach needs their first win under their belt before they can kind of calm themselves down, if you will, get back to regular business, because you're always going to be, if he went 0-6 last year, do you think he would really be feeling good about himself moving into year three? They did get a win against, it was Bowling Green, correct?
Yeah, they beat Bowling Green, right?
Yeah. It's still a win nonetheless. They couldn't get it during the 0-12 season. It's a step in the right direction. I watched last season. I think these players are buying into what Tom Arth is selling. I'm not so confident as you are in the bowl aspect. I don't think that they can make that leap yet. But I think three, four, five wins isn't out of the realm of the possibility. Now, will the inexperience once again? I'm leaning more towards the 3 or 4 wins. But to your credit, if they have one heck of a season like Western Michigan did, where they just shocked everybody, I think the team to do it. I'm gonna say this. I think the teams to possibly shock are either Akron or I'm going to say Kent State. I feel like Kent State's really feeling themselves last year. Their offense was incredible, number one in the FBS, despite their shortened schedule. And no matter Isaiah McCoy leaving or not, you give Dustin Crum decent receivers and he's going to do work in. And I think Kent State is going to shock a lot of people, like Buffalo. I wouldn't say Buffalo really shocked anybody last year, but I think Kent State's a team to watch out for.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And I honestly feel like Kent State and Ball State next year, to me, are the top two teams going into this season. I could honestly see a situation where both of them are, you know, either receiving votes in the top 25 poll or you know, maybe get ranked at some point. I think both teams are going to be that good next year with the amount of talent they have coming back. So we'll see what happens. I know we're obviously gonna have a lot more time, a couple months here, to talk about football. But what about on the hardwood, Sam? Let's talk about hoops here real quick. Obviously, we're just a couple days removed from the national championship game, just a couple weeks removed from the MAC tournament. What are some things that you're looking for? What do you see moving forward into the 2021 season?
I think this year, this upcoming offseason, these programs, similar to football, are going to look a lot of different. I think we've had I could be wrong on this, but it just seems like we had more seniors, or more, I should say, impactful seniors than we have had in previous years. What, Jason Preston was a senior, correct?
He was a junior. So he's got.
He was a junior. Sorry about that. Marion Jackson, for one, was a senior. Yeah. You have Justin Turner, Danny Pippen, Ish. I mean, am I missing? I feel like I'm missing somebody.
You had Jonathan Williams from Buffalo.
Jonathan Williams.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious. I think we're going to see a kind of new rush of new faces and see how they work. I think freshmen are going to have to kind of raise their level. Kind of you're going to be depending on freshmen to play big minutes, unlike we've seen last year. You're going to have to put with the game on the line, down to Toledo versus Kent State. Kent State's going to have to put the ball in the hands of a freshman, most likely. It's going to be insane. It's going to be fun to watch a bunch of new faces. I'm gonna be watching that next season.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I agree with your general point too. Similar to football, I think a lot of college basketball teams next year are going to look completely different. I think there's a record number of players in the transfer portal right now. It's like up over 1,000 players. Everyone is taking advantage of this free year of eligibility and looking at their options. So I think a lot of college basketball coaches are going to have to remake their rosters on the fly this year. And so because of that, I think the teams that are going through coaching changes right now are really, really going to be in a tough spot come next season. So like I'm looking at Eastern Michigan and Central Michigan. Eastern Michigan, now it's been what, probably 3 weeks now since they let Ron Turner go. They haven't hired a coach yet. Keno Davis obviously just got let go the other day by Central Michigan, so they don't have a coach yet. Both of those schools are going to have to rebuild from the ground up, and you're going to have a new coach coming in with a roster of guys that they're not familiar with. They're going to have a lot of spots that they're going to have to fill. That's going to be a really, really tough job for whoever gets hired in both of those positions. So I hate to say this, but like I feel like next year in the MAC, I'm almost going to be looking at Eastern Michigan and Central Michigan as like these are going to be two free wins for the other teams in the conference. I really don't see how either of those teams is going to be able to be very competitive next year.
Yeah, that's a very true point. What East or Central Michigan and Eastern Michigan could be two free easy wins, but honestly, I think what teams need to do is I've said it and I'll say it again, is have a coaching hire kind of in place within your program. North Carolina did a tremendous job of having Roy Williams for a long time, and now they have their assistant who's been there for 10 plus years be able to step up. Because yes, it's not a entirely new face, and maybe you want to go in that direction. But at the same time, he could bring a new philosophy. He could be a transition piece for the new program you want to see, because he's going to bring a new perspective. He's going to change the things he wants to see. And I think that's what college basketball teams need to start adopting, is a coaching and hire, because like we've seen, First years, letting go of your coach are 99% of the time rough. And yeah, if you can have a guy who can kind of ease your transition, he's going to be a guy who's probably been talking to your commits, so they're not going to want to leave. He's a guy that's going to be within the program, provide a sense of stability. And even if he's not the guy at the end of the day, at least you had a few transition years, because you don't have to sign him to a 5-year contract. You can keep him at your contract and do what you need to do. Maybe you go after a big name after that. But the point remains is coaching and waiting is what I'm trying to say, is a key for these basketball programs. And I'm just waiting for them to figure that out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I especially agree with your point, Sam, about the recruiting aspect of it. I think whenever you fire a coach, especially in basketball, the recruiting trail is where you take the biggest hit, right? Because if that head coach had relationships with all of those incoming commits, he had relationships with high school coaches in the area, he had relationships with junior college coaches. So if you have another, you know, assistant on your staff who you can retain, who is able to maintain some of those relationships through that transition, that can really ease things and make it a little bit of a less rocky transition. So I think that's a very good point you make there. And we'll see. Obviously, I would expect both, you know, Central Michigan and Eastern Michigan to make a hire here within the next couple of weeks, I would think. We'll see who either of those programs hire and how they decide to move forward. Sam, anything else you wanted to touch on here tonight? I know we made it through the news, all the spring sports breakdowns, a little look ahead to football and basketball. Anything else you wanted to touch on here before we let everyone go?
No, not really. I'm excited for just spring football, to be honest. Ball State just got their new indoor practice facility.
I saw done. That. Yeah.
They're going to be having their pro day, so I'm probably going to be tuning into that to see what that looks like, because seeing inside of it is a lot different than driving by it on a road. It just is.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just excited for that. I'm excited to see the NFL draft, see all the MAC athletes get drafted, whether it's from Buffalo, Ball State, whatever the case is. I'm just excited for football season. Spring sports has been a lot of fun. I've been catching baseball here and there. That's been a lot of fun. And this season, as bad as we made it, I think it's made us appreciate sports even more. And I'm loving every second of whether it's betting, watching, whatever the case, going to. It's been a fun time.
Agree with all of that, Sam. Very, very well said. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode here this week, guys. I don't remember if I said this at the beginning, but episode 40 of the podcast, we are almost to half 100, which is crazy. So thank you guys for continuing to stop by every week and listening and supporting the pod. We appreciate that. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. Looking forward to talking to you guys again next Friday. He is Sam Thillman. I am Zach Folador. This has been another episode of the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast. Thanks for stopping by, everybody.